Good morning to you. This is the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. 4341790, the number you call. You can also reach us at brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. That's via email. Or you can send a WhatsApp message to 266-4862-266-IVOB as soon as we get our tablets in order. We shall be able to get your messages there. I'm Dennis Johnson, your host. We go until 1 today. We have coverage of the Barbada Secondary School's athletics, and that's today at 1. And for the rest of the week, we're going to be at 2. Then next week, Monday, semifinals of NAPSAC will be on VOB. And then I think the following Tuesday, which is the 17th, the final of NAPSAC should be on VOB as well, all day long on that date. And I think BSAC finals are Thursday and Friday, but I'll hold off until I get confirmation on those dates. But that's the way we should be going for the rest of this week and into next week. One of the most important, John Stout, the Lion, is taking care of things technical. Good morning to you, John. He'll make sure we stay on the straight and narrow. Technical operator, producer, and the guy who answers the phone. One of the most important dates on the calendar of our parliament is the estimates. And that's what we're doing during the course of the last week. We've had estimates debate. These estimates debate come at a time when the world is worried about the effects of the coronavirus. And then to add, I suppose, injury to insult, we had the shocker yesterday that seemed to have thrown not only brass tacks, but the nation into a bit of turmoil. This is where leadership counts, and this is where the leadership of Prime Minister Motley and her team will be under scrutiny, and how they handle the challenges on both the coronavirus issue and this distressing issue of industrial relations is what will make the difference between success and failure. What is interesting, however, to me, as someone who whose heart is still somewhere in the hospitality industry, is the way we still continue to treat the industry as being separate from our daily lives, and sometimes we don't make the connections. And when I saw in the newspaper during the course, I think, of the estimates debate, a comment from a spokesperson from the parliamentary opposition who said that after the shooting incident involving a visitor to Barbados, that there should be harsher penalties for crimes against visitors as against locals. I kept wondering, where are our minds and do we think before we speak? Because if the gentleman plans to get into parliament, I know he ain't planning to get in by visitors voting for him. So if you have a visitor pegged a little more important than me, a local, don't ask me for your vote because you ain't getting it. That's just me. Because I strip it that way. Lives are lives. And we can't judge people based on economic value or what we think is the economic value to us. Because if we do that, we'll say managing directors are valuable and vagrants are not. Right? That's just by extension. But that's because I'm an extremist, so I like to go to extremes. But yesterday, talking to the taxi driver who was talking to David, when David called me in, that's what I was trying to establish when I asked him about what we call cheap guests and, you know, guests who we see catching the bus and walking with plastic bags. Guess what? The money that they spend on the bus and the money that they spend in the supermarket and the money that they spend at the gas station, they employ agents. Somebody, daughter, grandson, son, boyfriend, getting a little pickings. So we can't say they're not contributing to the development of the country. It's not only the people who go to the high-level restaurants, the 120 of them that are spending $400 a night that are contributing. Because the girl at the gas station pump not working at the $400 restaurant. She's working at the gas station. So there is an apartment building called Craggy Nook, C-R-A-G-G-Y-N-O-O-K, on Highway 7 in Hastings. There are three. One's a two-bedroom, one's a three-bedroom, the one on the floor is a three-bedroom. Google it. You believe Google has got to Google it. Look at it. It's on sale for $3,200,000 US dollars. If I had that lying around, I would buy it. look at the quality of the accommodation and tell me if you see a guest staying at Craggy Nook walking across the lanterns with a plastic bag to buy at the iMart or to go by to get a pizza from Urban Kitchen. Tell me that they are not as quality a tourist. Or you see them walking to the Garrison to look at horse racing Saturday. Tell me they are not as quality as the guests that you see taking a taxi down on the Sandy Lane estate. We can't make these kinds of determinations. This incident, however, with these restaurants proves again, to me anyhow, if nobody else, that we still need to have worker representation in Barbados, no matter how outmoded we may believe the leadership or the thinking may be. If we have to bring the trade union movement kicking and screaming into the 21st century, if we have to tell our workers to stop being exploited singularly, this should drive it home. If this doesn't drive it home, nothing will. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Yes, sir.
Let you read my mind. I'm not saying that.
I hope not.
A lot of these things you said in your presentation, I was going to say this morning, I am an extremist. There's no matter wrong with me. I hear people talk about half brother, half sister, half dead. I remember a brother of mine wrote a book at the official launching. I was introduced to a friend of his. And, of course, he introduced me to this, but the guy said, I don't know him. He ain't from the Bell. He said, no. Oh, this is your half-brother. I said, I am.
Which half?
Right. There you go again. There you're reading my mind again. I said, I am Lloyd's brother. I'm sure you won't mind me calling his name. He said, oh, you're his half-brother. I said, okay, do me a favor. Say that you know I'm his half-brother. Tell me which half is my brother. So when I have anything to give to my brother, I will not mistakenly give it to the other half. Everybody laugh. If my get blue back and say, I embarrass him, I make the minister on that half. You see? Now, people are often very critical of government workers. Some of them deserve the criticism. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of them, Dennis, who go above and beyond the call of duty, mm-hmm. who are dedicated, who go to work, who do the work, and everything associated with it. I feel that anytime there's promotion to be had, persons should be promoted not only by their qualifications, but how well they're performing the job, and not because of who they know, who is related to them, mm-hmm. and whatever else. It is very funny. I'm very serious about this. It hurts me that government after government criticize each other. And when they get there, they talk about government being a continuum. Mm-hmm. It really is. It's a continuum.
Words that you cannot use. I keep, you know, people ask me sometimes why I cut certain things, right? Words like wicked and stuff, people tend to call the lawyers. I don't, you know, I just warn you.
Can I use victimization?
Well, it depends. You ain't saying anybody victimizing, so you could say so. But when you say people wicked, there's ritual. There's ritual lawyer.
I would call you a guy there, right?
Yeah, thank you, sir. I got to tell you, no, let me just tell you quickly, eh? The reason why I like to draw those lines for people is because there are times, even when I sit in the producer's chair, there are things that I don't think may be actionable, and I get cautioned about it. For example, when Glenn called the other day to tell me that the term convenient memory could mean, and he listed a whole set of things that were, if it was not Glenn, I guess the person who wrote the letter would have written a letter. And I was the producer, so I would have been the one going home. But, right. I mean, I did not think that saying somebody had a convenient memory meant the things that Glenn explained. But when he explained it, the way he explained it, I got the message. Yep.
Have you noticed, I heard you say you don't let nobody mentioning people's names, and they don't.
Yeah, but I told you why that, right?
I don't, right? Yeah. Now, I would like anyone who have a heart, who really have a heart, you're going to work, you're performing, you're doing what you're supposed to do, and you see someone else come who don't have a clue, who don't perform, but because of their connections, whether it's political or family, they are pushed. It breaks your spirit. It breaks your morale.
Really?
I don't want to know what word to use.
Really? Why would it?
Right?
Why would it?
Human being, it may not affect you. Right? Now, the final thing, because the program is short today and I won't go too long.
Mm-hmm.
I read in paper the other day that fish vendors and selling dolphin by the pound.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read it, it was said because of the size of the dolphin.
Right.
And the way I understood it, because it was probably said that buyers are being held to ransom. Well, so I look at it. Buyers want to be held to ransom. I have no problem giving a fisherman whatever he wants for his fish, because even if he casts off, then they guarantee he's coming back. All you have to do, let the people who come up with these things keep the dolphin, eat it, or whatever they want to do with it. We have to start protesting and just stop grumbling. There's no point in grumbling and begging. We are the ones who have the power. You can make me an offer. I don't have to accept it.
Fair enough,
sir. Have a nice day, Dennis.
You too, my brother. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Hey.
Morning, it's Glenn Murray.
Hey, Glenn, how are you, man?
Oh, yeah, I'm Glenn, man. Good stuff. And first of all, the mention you made of me just now, I always remember one of the first I learned in journalism, where defamation or possible defamation is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
When in doubt, in this case, you cut.
No, but you know, sometimes I see WhatsApp messages saying, why are you always cutting the important parts? And I go in, but how you know the part important if I cut it?
And context is always important.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Right.
Yes, it is.
And you may have an intriguing opening there. You have some delicious subjects which I'd be tempted to bite at, but I'm sure the ones about the restaurants, etc. And industrial relations, that's the one I want to talk about. Not today, maybe tomorrow, if I can get in.
All right.
But I want to bring back to go back to the topic I raised last Friday with David. When I raised the question of the honors, the new set of honors, the Pride of Barbados honors being awarded in connection with the gathering celebrations.
Uh-huh.
And I had raised them because I want to be sure that there are always protocols attached to certain national honors, as you would know. In other words, I want to be sure then that these honors, which are being awarded, have the same standing and status and recognition and treated with the same dignity and reverence, to get the same inspiration and impression as the others, the more established, prestigious ones. Now, you know, a knight or a dame of St. Andrew are, you can use after their name, Dennis Johnson, D.A. or K.A. Knight of St. Andrew, D.A. Dame of St. Andrew. Then there's the Companion of the Honor of Barbados, CHB. Then there's the Gold Cromwell, GCM, the Silver Cromwell, the Barbados, etc. So there's a hierarchy, and there are abbreviations that go after the names.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what will be, whether these persons to whom these awardees will be allowed to use Pride of Barbados, P.O.B., after their names, or whether they'll be just, you have a J.P., the first one is your J.P., it's your J.P., but these persons, in order to give continuity and longevity.
But are they national awards, Glenn?
They are national.
Okay.
But I've not heard any, this was confirmed last day when I was watching an ad on TV about the gathering, also when listening to a discussion of people's business Saturday night, where they're national honors and they're being managed out of the cabinet office. So they're national honors.
Okay.
Right? So but I go back to them because after I made my comments last Friday, I got some calls from some person who said there were some persons who were being awarded who got the call the day before. I said, by the way, Mr. James or Ms. Jones, you are being thinking, can you turn up at 5:30, 6 o'clock or whatever? I feel that is insulting. I feel that the protocols of government, haven't been involved in organizing things in government. The basic rule in my day used to be an invitation to go at 10 days to 2 weeks for a decent notification. And I think it devalues, and I think it's an insult to a recipient to be told the day before, come for an honor, you'll get it honored. There's no prayer correspondence, no letters, no prayer phone calls, say get ready, nothing at all. And I see that does not do it justice. And especially as some of these awards are supposed to be given to Barbadians abroad. I see, in other words, let the protocols that are obtained to all other national honors obtain to this. Otherwise, I don't want to treat them as a community award, and you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. I want to have the same standing and status that people have. Plus, I think there should be an insignia. All the other awards, you get a ribbon or something that you can put on your lapel or your coat or your dress. I think there should always be insignia to go with these honors.
I will try and find out the answers to those questions, sir, because it's obviously something, I know you've raised it before, and hopefully those who are given the awards will be recognized in the same manner and, as you say, be able to put the, if there is an insignia on their breastplate, or if it's the initials post after their names, that is done. Brass Dax, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Dennis. How are you? Clay Taylor here.
Hi, Clay. How are you, man?
I'm good. I wish to make a comment on the closure of V Street of Market Restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what would have caused them to want to close in the middle of the tourist season. Because this is now the beginning of March, and this is when the season actually ramps up. Having gone through February, which tends to be a better month, and carries on into March, so the situation must have been quite desperate, for lack of a better term, that they would want to close at this time. So I would like to hear some other stuff. They made reference to costs and increased taxation, and I would like for them to really put into the public domain what the taxation has done to their cost, because it is very easy to blame taxation. And one of the comments made was that there is a difference between restaurants that are within hotel compounds and freestanding restaurants. Mm-hmm. Now, that used to be so under the old Hotel AIDS Act, because the old Hotel AIDS Act did not make any reference to restaurants. It made reference to hotels. The Barbados Hotel Association changed its name to the Barbados Hotel and Tourism Association and lobbied for duty-free concessions for freestanding restaurants. And I believe it was Minister Seeley when he was Minister of Tourism, and I'm speaking subject to corrections. But a new act was passed, and that act was called the Tourism Development Act, as opposed to the Hotel AIDS Act. So the Hotel AIDS Act went out, and a new Tourism Development Act came into being, and it supported duty-free concessions for freestanding restaurants and a whole range of other what was referred to then as direct tourism services. So I am not sure that the CEO got it 100% correct when she said the playing field was not level, because government through the Tourism Development Act sought to correct that anomaly by changing the law and doing away with the Hotel AIDS Act and bringing into being the Tourism Development Act. Now we talk about costs, they talk about taxation. Mm-hmm. And I would also like to hear from them what, in terms of cost, what percentage or reduction they saw in their cost and their average check. You know, as you know, in the industry, certainly in food and beverage, a lot of it has to do with your average check, what your average check
was,
revenue produces. And I would like to hear from them what they have seen happening to their average check maybe last year, the year before, and this year, so that the general public and me who's interested in these kind of things can have an understanding of the impact of cost as it relates to their input costs, their raw material costs, and so on for their menu planning, and the indirect costs as it relates to taxation and so on. What kind of numbers and what kind of impact those things have had on their operation?
Overall operation.
Yes, because as I said from the beginning, I think it is kind of a desperate situation where you have restaurants of the quality of Sin Sin. Well, I can speak for Sin Sin because I've eaten there. The food was excellent. It's not particularly cheap, but again, the quality was good, so I didn't have a problem. But why would you want to close in the height of what is potentially, let me put it that way,
your busiest period,
your best period?
Yeah. When I looked and followed the story, unlike you, I have not been in there. There are some places that don't beckon me. Let me put it that way. I read some of the things being said, and what concerns me from the overall standpoint here, Clyde, is what I consider to be poor staff relations. To me, it is inconceivable that anybody would call someone whose designation is assistant manager at 6 o'clock in the morning to advise the staff that the business is closed. And the reason you give for doing this is that if you tell people in advance that their level of service will drop, to me, speaks of poor management and poor industrial relations skills. You've worked in the industry far longer than I have. You've worked here and elsewhere. And things like closure for down periods, closure for refurbishing, putting people on time and a half or time off or half time or whatever, requires discussion, engagement, understanding, and empathizing with your people so that they know why you're doing it and for how long. And to me, it smacks of a level of, I have seen it, and let me say this, it is not about this hotel or this restaurant or this business or that business. There's an overall seeming nonchalant way in which business treats their staff, their internal customer, because if your staff are not engaged and feel like they're important, they're not going to treat the people that come in to pay in any good way. And we've fallen from standards that we've established through years of representation from the workers' unions in Barbados. And it worries me.
It does worry me as well, because as you said, when you are going to call your assistant manager at 6 o'clock in the morning to tell him to call staff, to tell him that the business is closed, that's not acceptable. Now, any assistant manager should be involved
in the discussion of when you're closing.
In any discussion of when you're closing.
Correct.
Because he might very well be leading a shift or leading staff, so the staff is looking to him.
Correct.
He has to know what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it has to do with disrespect for staff.
Correct.
I mean, correct. You can't put it. You can't put it any other way, and you have to embrace. You have to embrace your staff. If you do not embrace your staff and take them into your confidence and sit down and discuss with them the things that are challenging the business,
mm-hmm.
then something is wrong.
Wrong.
Because sometimes out of the same staff
will be ideas on how to make the business profitable. Correct.
You can get ideas and suggestions
correct.
That can help you to get your business
back in track
on its feet again.
Correct.
I had an experience when I worked at Sam Lawrence Castle with a housekeeper who we were having problems in the laundry where the washcloths particularly were dropping in holes. And she said to myself and the laundry manager, when you put the chemicals in to clean, these washcloths were white. She said, when you put the cleaning chemicals in, do not use any bleach, because the bleach and the cleaning chemical is going to react and it's going to cut
destroy the
holes in you wash gloves. We stop it, and
the problem went away.
Problem went away. And she was their housekeeper.
And
on the line, she was not a supervisor or a manager. She was a housekeeper on the line. And we raised this issue at a staff meeting with the housekeeping staff, and that was her idea.
You see, they're
two chemicals mixing up and causing problems.
And this is where, you understand. And Clyde, this is where you understand the value of talking. Yeah.
So my thing is, you have to embrace your staff. Because as you said, they're internal customers. You remember John Allen? John Allen had a simple philosophy. Take care of your staff, and they are going to take care of your customers. Simple.
Mm-hmm.
Take care of the staff. And that was he would beat that into our heads morning, noon, and night. Take care of the staff. Give them good washroom facilities. Give them decent locker facilities. Give them decent lunch facilities. Take care of them. Talk to them. Engage them. And when you do that, they become part of your organization, a big part of your organization. They support it in and out. And in turn, they take care of the staff because they recognize that the staff, that they take care of the guests because they recognize that it is really the guests that paying them.
That's paying them, correct.
That's not a matter of it.
This to me, Clyde, is a wake-up call. And, you know, I mean, as I said, I know you've been in and around the industry for a while, and you have had the opportunity to deal with closures and retrenchment and recruiting of staff over a period of time. And I certainly have said openly that I've benefited from working with you and people like Hudson, Dr. Hudson Husbands, Margaret Estwick, various other people, Hensley Sobers. And the way in which we, as newbies in the business, so to speak, were encouraged to deal with our staff members, to listen to them, to talk to them, to engage with them, and right across the board has been a tremendous benefit to me through the years. I find it unfortunate that a country that depends on hospitality as its engine of growth. As I started the program by saying, with the challenges of coronavirus and certainly the other things that may fall out because of it, we need to be very careful because we don't have many pistons in this engine. And I don't know how much buffeting the ship could take. And I made the point to David yesterday, when I look at, for example, the devastation in the Bahamas because of the hurricane, and the fact that the vultures have flown in, I call them vultures on purpose, have flown in full blown. We're going to build here, £300 million there. We're going to take over that island there. We will move people here. We'll move people there. And again, with Cuba being closed back because of the gentleman in the White House, they're looking for opportunities in the Caribbean. Now, the question is, are you looking for opportunities to exploit, or are you looking for opportunities to partner? Because there is a difference. Because there's nobody could tell me that the Lyndon Pindlin Airport in the Bahamas is comparable or superior to the Grantley Adams International. It's not. And Grantley Adams International is being expanded. So if the cruise lines are looking to set up massive hotels on islands in the Bahamas and take it over, how are they moving people in and out of there? They can't be flying them in and out. Virgin Atlantic, they have flights to Barbados on a regular basis, now has a cruise ship. Where is that cruise ship going to go? Are they going to have like Cunard used to have, Fun Now, See Later, Sail and Stay, and those types of programs which put people through the island for a period. Now, those are developments we have to watch because there is money in the industry. The question is, where is it going and why? And the second part of it is, if the coronavirus runs for a while and disrupts that type of movement, what effect will it have on our industry and our engine of growth? I find that when we have to have these types of discussions, we tend to focus on individuals, people who are making noise, who tired talk, who are tired here, as opposed to what the issue or what the person says the issue is, because what I say the issue is may not be the issue. But I look forward to hearing discussion on how we handle these things, because this is not the first isolated case. You had Sir Charles Williams trying to sell Apesil. You have other big projects in Barbados that either haven't gone or somewhere in abeyance. So I saw a letter to the editor saying you can't start projects without water. Well, I could tell you in the Grenadines, they don't have a water authority, and they had developments going on there, and one of the operators is a realty in Barbados, and they had to bring water in by barge. So there are ways to get water to a project if you got the financial backing to sell it. And that's what we have to look at. What is it about brand Barbados, that we need to polish and sell? Thanks for your input, Clay. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Greetings and salutations to your great staff.
To you too, sir.
Those who remember the past with a clear conscience need have no fear of the future. Attorney at law Mr. Ezra Allen, without doubt, can be deemed to be a good constitutional lawyer. He had grown 20 feet taller in my estimation during the Great Train Robbers case, which was heard before the then Chief Magistrate, Mr. Frank King, who went on to become a High Court judge. It was with great interest that I read Mr. Allen's article in last Sunday's Sun of March the 1st, 2020. I am not legally literate, but it is believed that in legal terms, equity looks at the substance, not the facts. Mr. Allen has been quoted as to say, two-party system may be in crisis, end of quote. I shan't expatiate on his column, as I prefer the trained political analyst to analyze. However, a battery has a negative and a positive. And if dealing with the two-party system, the DLP and the BLP, Mr. Ezra Allen has short changes. He made mention of the illegal, he made mention of the Eager 11, but conveniently left out the Fervor Four. One should recall the words of former Prime Ministers, the Right Honourable Sir Lloyd Erskine Stanford and the Right Honourable Professor Mr. Oinathe. Sir Lloyd, who said, who are not with us or who are not with me is against me, and I know all those who that are diametrically opposed. The Right Honourable Owen Professor Arthur, history would record at the end of the day, Sir Lloyd had no enemies, but he was disliked by his friends. Mr. Alice, since the Fervor Four has slipped your memory, where did BLP Knights are there Arthur Knights? As the saying was, Arthur more than ever, be going with Wayne. However, the BLP has found it there under the astute leadership of the Honourable Mayor Amor Motley, QC, MP, the Prime Minister of Barbados. That's my contribution for today, sir. I listen for your comment.
So if you said you would leave the comments of Mr. Allen's writing to the political analyst, I don't know why you tried to analyze it without reading it. The comment he made about the two-party system being under threat, after reading Ezra's comments, the headline, I am not sure he wrote the headline, because that's what the headline said. But having read the article, what I got from it was that Mr. Allen believes, as indeed I do, perhaps that's why I read more into it than you did, that there is an absence in Barbados at the moment of meaningful and constructive, mature opposition. Let me put it that way. And that is what I thought was meant by the two-party system being under threat, because he saw it as being one party not yet organized to be a force for an alternative government, let me put it that way, and seemingly no other entity with either the maturity or the reach to make a difference to the political life of Barbados. One of the challenges I see going forward for the established political parties is maintaining the type of structure that worked in the 1950s and 60s, and the new entities that seem to want to build from the top down. And I said this to one of the younger people who said they wanted to be a candidate. I said, you can't start a party from having some men gathering in a room and saying, we have a party. That's a fet. You have to have youth organizations. You have to have Women's League. You have to have community outreach. You have to be rooted in something to get people to believe you. You can't say, I am the leader. These are my followers. We have a party. That's a fet. Get some drinks, serve some food, and call it a fet. It's not a party. But we seem to have people who believe that that's what it is. Anyhow. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Good morning, sir.
Welcome back.
Back?
Yeah.
I prefer to be in the back.
you miss one thing with that party.
Which is?
The music.
The music? Well...
I'm glad you're here for me to talk this morning. I'm a bit grieved over some happenings that have been taking place in Bridgetown. I want to deal with this morning Lower Bridgetown. Perhaps another morning I'll deal with the River Road and Fairchild Street area. But I am really hurt, and I hope that as I talk to you, that the gentleman from the homeless Safi, what's his name, sir?
Yeah. Safri.
Kimar Safri, and also the advisor to the Prime Minister on poverty alleviation. I hope they're listening. Mr. Johnson, I am hurt. I am hurt in the sense that I am seeing a deterioration of Bridgetown, especially in the area of Jubilee Gardens. And I say that to say this, right? I don't know if it was a wedding. I don't know if it was a party. I don't know what it was. But I passed through Jubilee Gardens the other night, and it was packed with rodents. So there had to be some celebration. But, you know, during the daytime and later the night, there are about four vagrants who occupy Jubilee Gardens at night. There's one guy who's up by the powerhouse. There's another old lady who sits across just as you make your way down to Cheapside. There's another younger lady who sits right there as you come off Lower Broad Street, and there's a guy. Now, these are four people who are occupying, homeless people who are occupying Jubilee Gardens. The position is here that it is filled with rodents. Obviously, the same places that those people sleep, the same places that those people rest their hands, the same places that those people probably rest one of the utensils that they're walking with is where we'll accommodate the rodents. I believe it is time that those responsible for Jubilee Gardens start to clean up the area. And clean up the area with an understanding that it is not their duty to, it is everybody's duty to observe and to keep it as it is. I could not believe when I'm asking, they talk about power wash, they have no water to power wash, but they're tanks. You can get water tanks off of plantations for that purpose. And I'm of the opinion that there's a need to power wash Jubilee Gardens to take up all of those iron grills and push all that muck and mire from where it is. I'm of the opinion that you look at the area of Jubilee Gardens. You've got a fast food service up the road. You've got a supermarket just across the road. You have several areas of production. So obviously you're going to breed the rodents. I do not think that those... You say something, sir?
No, I'm waiting on you. Go ahead.
I do not think that those four elderly people and they're women, they hurt my heart. And I've been standing this down for the last 4 weeks. right? 4 weeks. They're women, and somewhere along the line, I don't know the reason they're there, but I believe that they should be looked after. I don't believe that that Jubilee Garden should be kept in that condition. I know there are a group of men who sit there during the day, and they don't be there at night. They sit there during the day discussing positive things, because sometimes I drop in positive things as far as Bridgetown is concerned. They, too, are concerned. I remember, you remember, when Bridgetown was being transformed. We saw the removal of St. Mary's Church Wall, where you could look right into the cemetery. We saw the broad, Wickham Broadwalk. We saw the transformation of Hero Square. We saw what could be known as Parliament Square. All of these things under a former government minister, the senior minister, Dan Billy Miller. I wonder why there's a lack of maintenance now. There's a lack of maintenance, and I'm asking that somewhere along the line. We're talking about the virus now, but we must be concerned that somewhere along the line we may be inbreeding a serious outbreak of something in this country. Those four old people who got nowhere sleeping in Independence Square under those Jubilee Gardens under those conditions.
Couple things. One, you have the Chamber of Commerce and various other organizations. Certainly, if there is a need to clean, deep clean, let me use that term, because maybe they don't want the power. So I'll use deep clean. The area, I know the Barbados Water Authority, certainly other construction companies of water, not potable water that they use to clean areas with. The construction companies use it to keep down dust and so on. So they could find water, even if they use seawater, to clean the area. One. Two, the question of homelessness is one that keeps knocking around a lot. And there are some people, for example, the famous or infamous, depending on which side of the fence you sit, Ninja Man, who says he does not like four walls, he likes to be out in the open. So no matter how many times you move him, he comes back out into the open. It is difficult under certain conditions to just pick up people and move them. And that may be the challenge for moving some of the people who you see there at night. The question is, who are they, where do they come from, and why are they there at night? Now, that takes some effort, that takes dedication, and that takes someone taking an interest in it. The question is, whom? Now, if you have a situation where, heaven forbid, something happens to one of them, then there'll be a big hue and cry. I take your point that we are not treating our city with care. Yesterday, I walked across from the station here and around the back, and the entire area that was nicely done and grassed has been in a mess. The stones on the walkway, some of them are cracked, some are moved, but it's a work in progress, so again, we're going to have to redo it. But along the boardwalk, you see areas where things are discarded, people throw refuse, bits and pieces of fast food, pleasures left behind, and that's what breeds the rodents. The bones, the pieces of bread, and the various other things that we toss in the corner, expecting somebody to pick it up. I don't know who the somebody is or where they come from. This question about civic pride is lacking, along with several other things. And it can't be fixed by us wringing our hands and screaming and shouting at each other. It takes a group of dedicated people sitting down, working out a plan, and then selling it to the wider public. That is going to take effort. It's going to take time. We have several ministers and ministries involved in all sorts of things in and around the city. Somewhere, somehow, perhaps in the process of this regathering, going from parish to parish, whatever is established will eventually work out to the benefit of the city, where those who get together to gather in the city will see it as being their duty to continue to monitor the public spaces and to put representation to either the parliamentarians or whomever that they have to say, look, this is what we think needs to be done. This is how much volunteerism there will be. This is how much payment we expect. This is what we would like to do to be a part of making our city a place that we enjoy, and we could invite other people to come and enjoy it. That's the type of development and discussion, Mark, that I would like to see and hear when I sit here.
But you know, Mr. Johnson, Ninja Man is a soldier, a street soldier. Now, I am speaking here, and Safri does a fantastic job. I know there are government agencies, poverty alleviation, and that type of thing, but I know there are also National Organization of Women. I am of the opinion, and you remember some time back, a vagrant was murdered by some person, a female. I would not want that to happen again.
Correct.
I am calling on those in authority. It moved me so much that over the last couple of weeks, I just cannot understand what I am seeing, the deterioration. You talk about Uptown. But Uptown, if I should start to talk about Uptown, I would go on and on.
No, I didn't start to talk about Uptown. The reason why I mentioned Uptown is because yesterday, as I said, I went across to look at the work in progress. But I have been downtown. I have seen it as well. Look, you can't separate Uptown from downtown. Bridgetown is a city. It's a city. It's a city. And it's our city. It's our capital city. It's the first place you see if you come off a cruise ship and you take a walk. So we can't separate Uptown and Downtown. This is the type of separation that we have in our mind, Swan Street from Broad Street, Uptown from Downtown. We are a city, okay? The problem is, if you have people who walk across the bridge enjoying a snow cone and then toss the cup over the bridge, if you have people who sit in Independence Square and have lunch and leave the box at their feet, that's where the problem starts. It didn't start Uptown or Downtown or vagrants in the night. That's the point I was trying to make. That it is exploited by the vagrants because it is available. When you see a vagrant, a paro, whatever you want to call him, going into a garbage can and taking out things and throwing it all around him because he's looking for a bottle or a piece of something to eat, if it was not in there, exposed and available to him, he wouldn't be digging in there. It's not going to happen, right? And when you stay across where I stand, and people come and park next to a skip and take everything out, including, as David said, their dogs. I've never seen them, but I see mattresses and other things. I'm serious. And they throw it there. And if the skip is full out, they put it by the side of the skip and then get back in their cars that don't say M. So they ain't from St. Michael. They ain't from Bridgetown. They're from wherever they are. And they drop it there. That's what, that leads to part of the problem. But you see, and my thing is this, and this is why I say it with a kind of chuckle in my voice. I keep saying it all the time when I get the chance. We seem to believe that a mosquito in St. Michael is not going to disturb me because I ain't St. Philip. Well, guess what? You got relatives in St. Philip, all right? And you can send them a message and tell them bite you. You know, I mean, I remember going by Eddie Grant once, and Eddie had this container with some wood carvings in it. And he said when he opened the container, the people who were supposed to, the customs people who were supposed to be checking it, said, wait, this is wood? He said, yes. They say, no, close it back. You got to get a health certificate in case they had, you know, some kind of vermin or something on the wood. I say, but Eddie, if the container was open, the vermin left already and gone on an island tour. When you close it now, when you close it now, it makes no sense. Then he waited on customs clearance. If the wood had, I don't know what, bugs in it. The minute you open the container, right? And fellas say, right, we ain't here long enough, fellas, let me go on the beach. Close it back, let me make no sense. But you know, we laughed at it, but it's serious.
I want to come out on a point, Mr. Johnson. A lot of thought, I'm not against the building of the park, but what I've seen recently, and I think you've seen it because you're in the heart of it, is a disadvantaged movement to pedestrians. Pedestrians take, for example, those persons who, from downtown, who has to walk to the hospital. They're now transferred all the way at the back and all the way at River Road. Nothing wrong with that. But then on nights...
to walk.
Yeah, then on nights, that is their time. Then on nights, they're dark spots. When you look at the businesses that are shut out between Nelson Street and the closure, then somewhere along the line, it is something that restricts the pedestrians from moving. So I hope the planners would relate to the fact that somewhere along the line that there should be a walkway.
Can't. Construction zones are too dangerous. Bits and pieces fall in. You have to protect the public from themselves. This is one time I think this was done the correct way. The problem is we don't like to walk anymore. We want to park right in front of the building, get out, get inside, get back out. Walking is healthy. I agree with you. Dark spots at night will be a concern. Properly lit areas, yes, must. But, I mean, to tell me to get, well, it is inconvenient, I suppose, if you're accustomed to walking from here straight across to the Blue Machine by the traffic lights. You got to walk a little bit farther. But you know what? Discover Bridgetown. Go Nelson Street. You might like it. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
4341-790. I'm still without my WhatsApp at the moment and my email messages, but 266-4862 and brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. You should be able to get us there. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Yes, sir.
Dennis,
mm-hmm.
There are so many problems in this country. And when you become a regular caller and it's known to the public where you're here, you get so much information where people want you to speak about. Now we want to speak this morning. Pardon?
That's what you call it, information?
Yes. Uh-huh. Let me say this. I just had a matter where I had a judgment handed down in my field. I have never received so much calls and on the road. And you know what people are telling me? But you get a judgment, you gotta be careful with these attorneys. I went through so and so, and the attorney never discussed what I would be compensated, but then they want to offer me a figure. I said, well, my decision on that, I will deal with that myself. But to tell you what is happening out there, and I just draw that across the line to show you where people lose confidence in attorneys. And the attorneys are not treating the clients as they should. Because if you are defending some person that comes to compensation, you don't think it should be right that attorney should discuss with the person what sort of compensation he'd be looking for and give him in detail.
I got to ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
Why would they tell you not formally complain about it somewhere else? This is what worries me. We have these issues, as you say, plenty problems in the country.
Mm-hmm.
David, during this conversation yesterday, called me into the studio during a lull, and I sat there. That's why I ended up in the discussion with you yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm.
After I made the comment about treatment at restaurants, I saw WhatsApp messages saying, same thing happened to me. I went to this restaurant, this, that. Why these people just accept it? And there's a lady who called and kept calling my desk and calling my desk, finally reached me yesterday after about 5 or 6 calls because of a conversation I had in January with a gentleman on the phone about construction. And she tells me he sounds like a man that she could deal with. What's his number, the name of his company, and how to reach him? Now, this is a determination made on somebody having a conversation with me. I don't know his name. I know him as Mr. Robinson. I don't know the name of his company. I certainly don't know how to call him, right? Now, the reason why I'm saying that is this. Because when we had this discussion about building, same thing. People keep coming, oh, a contractor did me this. Oh, a workman did me this. Right? If these things are happening, why do we do nothing about it except call somebody else and tell them to call Brass Tacks? Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. You're right. That does happen.
No, but why?
I feel like people in Barbados are living in fear.
Fear of what? What is the lawyer going to do? Stop me from having breakfast tomorrow morning? Yes, because he ain't give me my money. That's how you'll stop me.
All right. Let me
what,
go on.
What is he going to do to me? Stop my son from getting a job?
Yeah. But you know, this is Barbados.
I know that, sir, and I tried to find out how we got to this.
All right, let me deal with something more. I just pushed that across the line.
I know, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, we in Barbados have to be conscious of government and private sector. Both government and private sector employs people. Mm-hmm. And we have to be careful. You remember very well that hotel in St. Broadview.
Yes, the, what after about 5 or 6.
Pardon?
No. That was a...
A man by the name of Matheson
mm-hmm.
was the manager. That hotel remained there. The man clear. Never owned National Insurance. Millions of dollars.
Correct.
Never heard of him since then.
We sent a gentleman to England to bring him back, and he disappeared too.
Right.
Not the gentleman who went to England. Yeah.
I think that was Kingsley Beach.
Kings Beach. Yeah.
Now, then I warn people, and David always like pulling my legs down, but as a socialist. But the difference between a government and a private sector, when these private people come into the island, and I was discussing this matter only weeks ago when I told them the shift of absentee landlords from the sugar-producing country Barbados, when we had the plantocracy. The majority plantations were owned by absentee landlords. We shift the economy to tourism. And in the same tourism, the hotels are owned by absentee landlords. And if we don't be careful, this country will be ripped off, continuously talking about investors, paying workers what they like. I don't want to do the union. But what I am saying, there are things that happen in this country, and before we sit down and look at the future of where this country is heading, we concentrate continuously. I was involved in, I love politics to this day, but we're going into party politics and forgetting national issues. We have to make some demands on the leaders of this country, whether it be DRC. Because the working class out there is going to suffer. Because when these people come and invest money and say, well, look, I'm going to stay in Barbados, just if you would rent to England and say, I want to spend 10 years, never could get £1,000 at a return. Then these people come here and they say they invest £2 million and they could get £6 million in 3 years, they're gone. And but, then left who behind?
But you see, sir, and this is the problem that we're not addressing. You see, you've put it in that frame, and there are people who try to fix it in that frame. Here's the frame. You have people in Barbados who have worked in the hospitality industry for years. They've developed a rapport with the clientele. They have developed their skills as managers. They have developed themselves as individuals. If we had the right environment, these people could start their own businesses, open their own hotels, employ more people, and the wealth of Barbados would remain in Barbados. We have some people who've done it. Odell done it. Guy who used to be at Rockley, he has his own hotel. But they're few and far between, like Carson Small used to say, like grandma's teeth. But we don't see those as being high-end operations that could bring in the big bucks. So we say people like the brand names. So you got to get the brand name hotels that the visitors are accustomed to and bring them into Barbados. It's not nonsense. They do the marketing, so they take the pressure off of us to market and advertise Barbados at the type of 9 million and 10 million that we would need. But... and this is where I always put the but. Smokey Burke say Bajans too love a but, so I must be a Bajan because I love a but. Here is the problem. You have to say to the developer, you have to say to the investor, you have to be big and bold and brave enough not to say, what you gonna give me on the side, but to say to him, look, like Errol Barrow did, yes, bring Hilton. Yes, bring your manager, but train a Barbadian to be a manager at one of your other properties in the next 5 years, or train ABC. The former manager of Hilton in Trinidad was a Bajan. He never worked in Barbados as a manager. He was in Trinidad as a manager.
Like we bring managers from somewhere else to manage the hotels in Barbados. And when I raised this with Noel Lynch, when he was Minister of Tourism, he told me, not as much as before, Dennis, we don't have that many executive chefs anymore, but I seen things in the newspaper up to today that somebody wants a general manager again, and I know it ain't coming from Barbados, and if you look through the papers, you will find it. My problem, sir, is that we need to tell the people, look, brand Barbados is good for your business. Yes, this is what we have. We have solid workforce. We have solid government. We have reliable electricity. We have reliable internet connection and so on. So for that, I am giving you 10 years duty-free, 25 years duty-free, but two persons alone will come from overseas. The rest of your management team have to be Barbadians or trained within a certain period. What's wrong with saying that?
Dennis, let me finish on this. Dennis, could you remember Intel?
Yes, I did. Very well.
No, you see, what bothers me...
Sir, but the people who are employed at Intel still in Barbados... And they're experts in their field, you know.
Exactly.
The name Intel is gone, but the people trained are here.
But I get into that. Give me a chance. I get into that.
Oh, okay. Drive your taxi.
I get into that. The point that I'm saying, that we should not continuously selling off our assets when government is an employer and the private sector is an employer. And a private sector has to make money by profit. Government makes money by taxation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, could you tell me why you should keep selling off our assets to other people and then turn around and use the dynamics of our hotel sales marketing agency that goes overseas and try to bring hotels here to fill up another private sector hotel instead of you filling up your own hotel? Could you tell me the reason for that?
Sir, I just told you because the brand names you bring in are supposed to give you marketing support. You bring in Sandals because they're supposed to give you marketing and advertising support to take the strain off of your tourism entities who may not have the 9 million, 10 million, 20 million in five different markets to spend. The problem is when they do not hold up their end of the bargain, what do? Because you cannot say I taking back my duty-free concessions when you sign it off for 25 years. And that's where we trap ourselves all the time. We sign off in the hope that they will do it. So let me give you, I mean, you drive people around, so you must hear them talking about it. When I worked in the industry, right, and we had American visitors, they would say, we want chicken and chips. And they would ask, where's the ketchup? And if you give them Mabel's, or Babel's, they would tell you, no, this is not ketchup, we want Heinz. So for American visitor, ketchup means Heinz. So you got to find Heinz to give to them. Now, we don't make Heinz in Barbados, right? And if we made it in Barbados, they would tell you, it don't taste like the one in America. So we got to import it. So that's how we find ourselves in this situation where we spend in foreign exchange to bring in foreign exchange. And we have to balance it. So if you have Sandals, Hyatt, Hilton, whomever, who will give you marketing support for 20 million, 30 million US or 30 million pounds, then give them 30 million in concessions. Fine, or 25 million. But don't give them 200 million in concessions and they give you nothing except saying, I employ 150 people when I build in and 200 people when I finish build. That's not an even trade.
Let me finish on this and let somebody else get it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I heard the Minister of Tourism speaking about eating out and how people from Sandals has come down to Oyston and eat.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, sometimes when I hear these people talking, they just don't understand what they're talking about.
Right.
Oyston is a place that is marketed and people want to get, they believe Oyston is the Bajan culture.
Mm-hmm.
So you left Sandals.
Mm-hmm.
And you come down to Oyston to have
a Bajan meal.
A Bajan meal.
A Bajan experience, let me call it that.
And that is only one night, you know.
Yeah.
After Friday night, you don't get that.
Okay.
But so. I could tell you, I would like to talk
so
to you
what?
A long time. Because you know why? As you just said, as long as you engage your passengers, you learn so much.
Correct.
They tell you so much. Last night I got home two Canadians. And they were telling me our tourism market is going down. And if we don't be careful, the big players going to price me out of the market. And you know people believe that because you're a tourist and you don't understand what is happening in the market.
So again, I will stress the point that I keep making. Right or wrong, it's a point I keep making. If I spend $200,000 on a Mercedes, I want $300,000 efficiency. If I get $35,000 efficiency from a $200,000 Mercedes, I've been cheated. If I buy a $25,000 or $22,000 second-hand or third-hand Suzuki and it's running like a $200,000 Mercedes, I'm happy like pappy. The problem is not the cost of the Beijing experience. The problem is what you get for what you pay for. So when you pay £200 per night and you are told you will have A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and when you get there and you don't get it, you have a problem. The destination expensive. When you get there and your room look like it's £400,000, you cross your legs and you like the king of Siam. You put your hand behind the neck, the madam happy, and you say, right, there'll be joy in the kingdom tonight because I spent £200. You know, well, sir, and
Dennis,
that's the problem.
Dennis, you are so right. Because the same two guests tell me, you don't know, I have to be paying $1,500 a night. A night,
yeah.
$1,500 a night.
Yeah.
So as you really understand what is happening, and I can say this, as we were talking about a taxi fare, I had to tell some tourists the other day, in a very, very manly way, it is strange that if a taxi driver asks you all for $40 for a trip, you want a bargain. But you know you didn't bargain when you paid the air passage to get here, or when you're going to the restaurant and
And so that is an unfortunate thing to tell them, because that sets up this discussion that I don't think you should have. You should tell them that the $40 that I'm charging for this fare is comparable to the $1,500 you spent on the airline, because it will be smooth, it will be engaging, and you will enjoy the trip so much, you're going to want me to come back for you tomorrow night.
But you're going to pitch yourself, man. Listen,
call me and I'm going to write the script for you, man. Listen,
yeah,
sir, we killing the industry. We killing. So let me tell you, $1,500, when Cunard had the Sea Goddess 1 and 2, two little yachts with about six cabins, people used to spend over, and that's back in the 1980s, over $1,500 US per person per night. But guess what? You had a maid assigned to your room, hung out your clothes, bring you this. Everything was free, okay? They even used to put a thing on your bed head telling you what the forecast for tomorrow will be. Every day, they changed the carpet in the lobby to read Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You know who used to be on it? Julio Iglesias, Diana Ross, all kind of big shot people. They're paying $1,500 a night and skinning their teeth. That's nothing to their pocket change.
All right, that is a different type of tourist you had then.
But no, they're still wrong. The problem is where they're going and why.
The tourists, you got no good in the supermarket.
Sir, and the supermarket. Sir, you see, that's why you get me vexed yesterday. Listen.
No,
listen, let me just tell you this as my parting shot, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know the girls in all them gas stations in Barbados, mm-hmm. bar none. I know those in the supermarkets. I know the checkout people. I know the people that carry bags. Them got families. They got children. They got to carry home something too. So the tourists got to go in there and shop, or else they'll go home
and do nothing. But the tourists got to
They only got one butler and one doorman in Sandy Lane. He can't make $6,000. Why my girls that talk to every day and buy my newspaper from can't get $1.50? Come on, man.
Dennis had his supermarket and ordered to help them with the sale groceries to get a job. But that's what I'm telling you, the tourists eat in the restaurant, they buy the goods and go home and cook. Thank you, Dennis.
You too, buddy.